This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. It's another week. That means another hour-long show where we talk about life and pro-life issues and everything going on around the country. Here in a little bit, we're going to have a guest on the phone, and we're going to discuss just the language of pro-life and the importance of our language, what that means, and why we should, how we should celebrate life, how we should talk about life. And I think it's important as we look at the current political landscape that we're facing, it's important to look at how believers, how those that stand for life and even those that aren't believers but stand for life, how we need to handle that, how we need to have the conversation, how we need to engage in that conversation. And so what I want to do, just like we do every single week as we talk about life, I think it's important that we don't find ourselves we don't find home in the muck and the mire that is going on around us. We need to get to a place where civility, again, reigns supreme. And right now, civility does not reign supreme. And as we also, as we talk about pro-life issues and pro-choice issues, we need to look at how do we have those conversations without being bitter and hate-filled. So what I want to do is yesterday, I was reading through some different things, and I came across an article at Think Progress, which is an interesting way, an interesting website, Think Progress, not a typical conservative website by no means, but the particular article that they posted has to do with a new Google extension, which will change every mention of pro-life to anti-choice. So every mention of pro-life to anti-choice. So if you want, you can download this extension. And whenever you Google anything that has to do with life or choice or abortion, if there's an article that says pro-life, this extension automatically changes that to anti-choice. So their argument is pro-life is synonymous with anti-choice. And we know that isn't the case, but this is their argument. So here's what they say in this article. If you've noticed that the politicians who claim the pro-life label are often singularly focused on restricting abortion and aren't necessarily working on other policy proposals that could save lives, there's a new Google extension for you. You know, I think it's interesting that they say that politicians that are pro-life only focus on abortion. Well, it's funny because I believe that pro-choice folks, all they focus on is abortion. They're not really focusing on, and we talk about this every week, they call it women's health and they do these things, but really their focus and their goal is abortion and wanting abortion on demand at all costs. So an extension released this week will change every mention of pro-life to anti-choice once it's added to a Chrome browser. So I love Google Chrome. I use Chrome browser for everything. But this will make it easier for those that are pro-choice to, and again, it changes every pro-life statement to anti-choice. Tired of seeing the fraught term pro-life used incorrectly, we conceived of this extension to shift the language of the discussion towards a more accurate framework, explains an online description of the choice language tool. The extension was created by an activist who wishes to remain anonymous. She partnered with the National Institute for Reproductive Health Action Fund to release it to the public this week. So again, reproduction, the process of reproduction actually produces a child. But yet they make the claim here, they even call themselves the National Institute for Reproductive Health Action Fund. So they're calling abortion a reproductive health health service. And they go on, we thought it was really interesting and a creative idea. Andrea Miller, the president of the National Institute for Reproductive Health Action Fund, told Think Progress. We agreed with her. And they go on further that the language in this discussion really matters. Now, I would agree with that as well. The language in this discussion does matter. Miller said her organization shares the activist concern over the pro-life label, particularly when it is used to describe legislation that ultimately serves to restrict women's access to reproductive health care. She doesn't think that it's a fair way to characterize those policies. Now, again, no one is arguing from the pro-life side that their health care needs to be restricted. Our argument is the baby inside has a right to life and has a right to their own care. These laws, again, they go further, The difference between pro-life and anti-choice may not seem like a big deal to some internet users, but reproductive rights proponents often argue that the language we use to talk about issues related to abortion can have a bigger impact. For example, pro-choice women who decide to start families say it can be hard for abortion opponents to understand why they would want babies of their own. The head of NARAL, Pro-Choice America, who gave birth to twins last year, once recounted to the Washington Post that her visibly pregnant belly attracted looks of shock and surprise in meetings with the leaders of major anti-abortion organizations. Well, and the look of shock is because of the absolute distasteful way that she refers to life. I mean, NARAL is the one that said Doritos were humanizing the fetus. So if you are carrying twins, and you're having baby showers and those type of things, are you not then humanizing a fetus? That is the larger question. So what they attack Doritos and what they attack pro-life people for, it does seem a bit of a hypocrisy when she carries a baby to term. The assumption is that people, and this again is the article, the assumption is that people who support abortion rights must not like or want children, as if the viewpoint on the other side of pro-life is anti-baby. If you state that something is pro-life, then the opposite of that is obviously quite demonizing, Miller pointed out. It's incredibly loaded. As a whole, the shorthand that Americans use to describe their stance on abortion rights is imperfect. Though the pro-life and pro-choice labels have defined the national conversation about abortion for decades, there's evidence that a growing number of Americans don't identify with these terms, and trying to categorize people into these two groups could be misrepresenting how the public actually feels about this issue. For now, Miller can't think of any better labels to use, but she's hoping that the new Google extension will help open up a larger discussion about the nature of the legislative effort to restrict abortion and the words our society uses to describe it. The fundamental challenge is that we look for labels that are very short and simple, but this is not a short and simple issue, Miller said. I'm not sure we'll ever find the magic answer, but we want people to take a moment to stop and think, hey, what is the agenda here? And based on that agenda, where do we really fall? So, yeah, let's do that. Let's stop and think what the agenda is here. I think it's ironic to me that they end the article that way. And they say, you know, there isn't a way to have simple, this isn't a simple issue, simply pro-life or pro-choice. So their way of making that better is not changing the pro-choice argument. Their way of making that better is now calling pro-life people anti-choice. And I do think it's an important to stop and think and say, hey, what is the agenda here? And based on that agenda, where do I really fall? So let's ask ourselves that question. What is the agenda here? What always comes up? At no point do pro-life people say they do not want women to have good health care. We don't ever say that. What we say is we don't want to see abortion allowed at all costs without any restrictions. Our goal is for life to be celebrated. So abortion is always their ultimate topic they want to get to, which is why they say that they're pro-choice. And so what we have to do is, I'm not even going to sit here and say that the opposite of pro-choice is anti-life. I'm not going to say that. But what I think is important is we have a conversation about what life is, when does life begin. That ultimately will be the deciding factor. Where do we believe life begins? When do we believe life begins? That is the question that we need to ask ourselves. That is one that's going to drive the debate. That is one that's going to drive the narrative. So it isn't, the opposite of pro-life isn't anti-choice. And I can prove that to you. At Hope Resource Center, we work with men and women every single day, regardless of their background, regardless of their stance on issues, regardless of their political affiliation, regardless of their bank account, regardless of their insurance situation. We are prepared to love and serve them as we need to. First being medically. We're going to take care of them medically. So if they come to us with an STD, if they come to us with an unplanned pregnancy, we are going to take care of them medically. You know what? We have some people that come in and they've already had an abortion. We have some people that come in and leave our facility and go get an abortion. Now, do we then say we will never see you again because we are pro-life and we are anti-choice and you have no right to make a choice? Is that what we tell them? Of course not. So that's why this argument of pro-life being synonymous to anti-choice is ridiculous. And it falls flat on its face because it isn't an accurate portrayal of who we are as pro-lifers. At Hope Resource Center, we lay out all the choices they have in front of them. We tell them, you have three options. You can choose to parent, you can choose to terminate, or you can choose adoption. Those are the three options in front of you. And regardless of the one you choose, and we use that terminology, your life will never be the same. And also, regardless of what you choose, we are going to love you. We are going to be here for you. We will not provide you an abortion. We will not refer you out for an abortion. But what we will do is be here if you need us. I had someone last night tell me on social media, they said, well, logically, no one is completely pro-life because medical services cost. And I was happy to tell them, well, logically and literally at Hope Resource Center, we are pro-life because the medical services we provide cost absolutely nothing to our patients. Absolutely nothing. We take care of that cost. Individuals, businesses, and churches take care of that cost. Now hear that. Churches that people want to demonize all across this country are giving us money and donating baby shower items and donating a lot of different things so that we can help and serve those in need in this community. Those that are Christian, those that are non-Christian. That is what's happening at Hope Resource Center. So to say that, well, no one is really pro-life, that's just not true. The abortion organizations, the abortion facilities, the abortion industry are charging every single patient that walks in their door. So are they really for choice? Are they really for life? Are they really for anything except taking care of their bank account? That's a question that should be asked. Because the hateful pro-life nut jobs over at Hope Resource Center are not charging a dime. And we're serving everyone and anyone that walks in our door. But these other organizations are not doing that. I've read articles today where abortion clinics are having to close because their client load is decreasing. And so they can't operate because they're not bringing in the money that they need to continue operation. They're not bringing in the money from where? From patients. That's what gets lost in this whole argument is abortion is the cash cow. That is where all their money comes from. So it's offensive to say that being pro-life is being anti-choice. That is just not true. Do we want to see abortion ended? Absolutely. Do I want to see restrictions on abortion? Absolutely. But do I believe currently in our system of laws that people have the right to choose? Absolutely. So I'm not anti-choice. Pro-choice people, the issue that I have with many of them and with the abortion industry as a whole is, okay, if you're pro-choice, what happens when that patient chooses life? Then what? Are you doing anything for them? Is Planned Parenthood and other places throwing baby showers for moms that have unplanned pregnancies? Are they doing anything to step in the gap and to help these men and women that choose life? Are they celebrating these men and women that choose life? Or do they only celebrate the ones that choose abortion? These are questions, these are conversations that we must get into. And what I'm going to do in the next segment is I'm going to talk about civility. I'm going to talk about the current political climate that we find ourselves in, which is very hate-filled from Republicans and Democrats, which is taken civility and it's absolutely thrown it out the window and saying, this is not who we are. Who we are people that yell and hate people and are bitter. And that is not what we were founded to be. And we're going to talk about that here in just a second. We'll be back. Shine bright, let your glory fill this land. Lift high, we're back. This is Andrew Wood. You're listening to An Hour of Life. That is, every single week we sit here and we talk about pro-life issues, and we talk about them at a micro level, so right here in Knoxville, Tennessee, and at Hope Resource Center, and then we go out further at the macro level and look at what that means for our country. Last week we talked about Justice Scalia and his death and what that means for our country, and what I want to do today is talk about kind of the theme is going to be civility, and why is it that we can't have good conversations and good debate on abortion and on life issues. And so so what I want to do, the first segment I talked about an article that I read that involves a Chrome extension app that will electronically alter any internet search that involves the term pro-life, and the alteration will replace all pro-life terminology with anti-choice. And so we talked about that, and the thing about this, the argument would be laughable if it wasn't so sad. The agenda of the abortion industry is a clear one. Abortion should be allowed at all costs, regardless of need, reason, or term of pregnancy. Actually, the abortion lobby takes this reasoning a bit further and also claims that abortion services should be paid for by the government and or employers. This is their motivation, and we have to understand that. Their goal was not accomplished in 1973 with Roe v. Wade. That was just the beginning. They have set their sights on eliminating any and all barriers to abortion. Their desires don't happen as long as half the population claim to be pro-life. This is where the change in terminology comes in. Abortion advocates know that they ultimately lose when life is at the center of the conversation and debate. This is why they are seeking to rid the debate of the narrative of this word. You see, they are instead wanting to abort the word life out of the discussion and paint pro-life advocates as anti-choice. And this is, of course, a calculated move. They are well aware that adding anti to the front of a stance in today's polarizing political climate can be a detriment and ultimately rid the landscape of those that stand in opposition to their agenda. We have seen this with illegal immigration, now anti-immigrant. We have seen this with Blue Lives Matter, now anti-African-American. And we've seen this with Black Lives Matter, now anti-police. I can continue on and on with all of those examples, but I think you get the point. We are living in a time where everyone is under attack for their stances, and all sides are looking to rid the debate of the other, and adding anti in the description only pushes us further apart. Now, I'll admit I'm guilty of this as well. I'm guilty of this on social media. I'm guilty of this on this show. I'm guilty of this in my conversations. My first reaction to the article that I discussed earlier was immediately to label pro-choice advocates as anti-life. Is this a proper or fair assessment? Do I need to spend the rest of the show painting all pro-choice supporters as anti-life? And I'm sure this is a surprise to many, do not believe that this is the direction I should go. My desire is not to rid the political landscape and debate of those that stand for abortion. I simply wish to engage in a logical, respectful, and useful debate on life, choice, and abortion. We can do this without calling names and spending our time in the muck and the mire. And I realize that this may be wishful thinking, considering our dangerous and hate-filled current cultural environment, but we must, however, go above the hateful rhetoric that is dragging our society into a bottomless pit with no hope of returning back to civility. Now, we can debate, and frankly, we need to debate these issues, but not at the detriment of our love for one another. We must refrain from allowing our passion for a particular issue to find its resting place in hate and bitterness. This does not help anyone. This only pushes us further apart, creating a wedge that will take generations to overcome. We are better than this. At least, we should desire to be better than this. I am unashamedly pro-life. This does not, however, mean that I am anti-choice. These two terms are not synonymous. Painting the pro-life world as anti-choice is not fair. And this is proven every single day at Hope Resource Center as we love and take care of post-abortive men and women. Our disagreements stem from things deeper than this. Our disagreements start in the womb and where life actually finds its genesis. Is this at conception, the first trimester, the second trimester, the third trimester, or when the baby is walked out of the hospital? These are items up for debate. I don't think they're up for debate, but these are at least items that need to be discussed. And these are items we should be spending our time on. Now, we can find our home in hate and bitterness and watch our society continue to crumble, or we can seek to discuss these very important issues. This is who we are as a country, one that debates furiously and passionately over the very heady issues in front of us, one that sought freedom from an oppressive regime because we believe that everyone had the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, one that the world looked to as an example and a leader in life, technology, manufacturing, and freedom, one that even in the depths of despair faced at Pearl Harbor and in New York came together to stand for something greater than ourselves. We were one willing to stand together for the common good. Now, you have the right to your opinion and to disagree with mine. You have the right to passionately debate the topics of the day. You have the right to do this with hateful rhetoric. It is my desire, though, that we would rise above this type of demagoguery. Our frustration levels are intensified because our leaders, quote unquote, care not about civility and are setting the example. This is on full display with our current presidential election. Now, don't fall prey to this way of thinking. I implore you to be passionate about the issues of the day and form your own opinions. Seek to go deeper than the surface level. I'm happy to debate and engage with anyone on the life issue, but changing terminology to support your agenda is not the answer. We at Hope Resource Center are not anti-choice. We are absolutely pro-life. We walk with women and men through the decisions they are facing. We understand that these men and women have choices in front of them. No one is hiding that truth. We believe life is always the best choice. This is why we serve everyone that walks in our doors, regardless of their background, bank account, or insurance status. Believing that life is always the best choice forces us to also care deeply for the life of the mother. Once again, our pro-life stance does not and will never stop at the womb. It absolutely penetrates the womb, but it never stops there. We also do all of our work at no cost to the patients. This is love. This is celebration of life, and this is who we are to be. The article that encouraged this rant frustrated me beyond belief, not because of their position, but because of their understanding of or lack of understanding of my position. This is why debate and engagement of the culture is so important. We must forever stand for life, and we must foster conversations that are lasting and impactful if we ever hope to see a better tomorrow for all. Now, that is who we are to be. And I think it's sad as we look at the atmosphere, the environment that we find our country in currently. This civility matters not. I mean, think about the founders back in the day. They went into a room and they fought and they stood up. You had so many guys that were just butting heads and what's the best direction and what should we do and how should we write this document? Now, they didn't agree on everything. And there probably were times where somebody might have punched somebody else or they really got close to that. But ultimately, they had the tough conversations and the tough debates to bring about positive direction for the greatest country this earth has ever seen. So if they did that, then why are we okay with yelling, screaming, and being hateful with each other? That is where we are today. We have political candidates, we have presidential candidates that spend all their days either tweeting or talking in a town hall, bad-mouthing and bashing other people. Is that who we are? Is that who we desire to be? Is that who you desire your kids to be? Think about that. Look at our leaders, those in D.C. Is there any of them that are still currently in the race that you go, if my kid could be like them, I would be happy? That is a role model for my child. That is a role model for my son. That is a role model for my daughter. Look at the front runners. Either of them, in either party, are those people that you want to tell your child to look up to, your daughter, your son to look up to? Are those the people? Is that the future of this country? Is that who we want to be? Is that who we want to strive to be? Or do we want to passionately and furiously debate the issues that matter, but do that with respect, with civility, from a place of love and devotion and care for this country and to our beliefs, or from a place of hate and bitterness? these are questions that we have to ask ourselves. I hope you will. We're going to talk more when we come back.
We were made to be courageous. We were made to lead the way. We could be the generation that finally breaks the chains.
We could be the generation. Lord help us. That is true. This is Andrew Wood. We're back. Today we're talking about civility. That is the theme of the show, civility. And the reason I wanted to do that is we talk about life issues. You know, I'm always saying it's not the life issue is not a political issue alone. Is it a political issue? Certainly. I mean that's how we get things done. Whether it be restrictions on abortions or taking restrictions off of abortion, that is a political process that has to be taken. And so because of that, we have to understand and know there's a certain way to have those conversations. Can you be passionate about that? Sure. Can you really dive into it and go deep with it? Absolutely. But again, there's a place to do that. You do that from a place of love and not from a place of hate and bitterness. So this again is not a political show, but as we look at the current political landscape, and as we look at the front runners that we have, you know, depending on who you talk to, you have Hillary Clinton. Really, everyone kind of assumes she's going to be the Democratic nominee, and on the Republican side, everyone's starting to assume that Donald Trump is going to be the Republican nominee. So you have two very angry people who have an opportunity to lead this country. And what that means is you have a lot of very angry people voting for them. Now, what I want to talk about is the Trump effect. So Donald Trump threw his hat in the ring, and now he's leading in mostly all the polls. I've only seen one or two polls that have him in second place, but he's leading in most all polls. And even the exit polls coming out of South Carolina, what we saw was the reason people are voting for him is because they're angry at Washington, D.C. They're upset. Well, I get that. Completely get that. I understand. I'm angry. I'm upset at what's been going on in Washington. But if you think about it, think back to if you ever had a parent or a grandparent that gave you advice, and they talked about making decisions out of anger. How many times did you regret the decisions you made in anger? I'd be willing to bet most of the time, if not every single decision that you made in anger, you regretted. So if you've looked at the candidates and you believe that Hillary's your person or Bernie's your person or Donald Trump's your person or Cruz or Rubio or whoever it may be, if you've looked at them and you've looked at their stances and their policies, and because of their policies you agree with them, that is one thing. But if you're voting for someone just because you're angry at the other party or you're angry at D.C., Hillary in one debate said her biggest enemy was the Republican Party. That's half the country. Is that the direction we want to go? You know, and Donald Trump comes out every single day and calls everyone else a liar. And he's attacking private citizens for where they donate money. Is that what we want? Do principles matter anymore? Principles should matter. And I think that we've kind of lost our way. And I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's the direction our country needs to go, especially if we are, folks, on the cusp of something amazing with the life movement. Absolutely amazing. We have so many young people and just so much conversation going around pro-life issues. And what could happen is whether you elect Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, there is many that are saying neither one. I mean, we all know Hillary's not pro-life. And Donald Trump, up until about 5 minutes ago, was pro-choice. Even in one interview in the late 90s, saying that partial birth abortion he was okay with. He would not ban it. He said he didn't like the idea of abortion, but he would do nothing. If he were the president, he would do nothing to restrict abortion. He has come out multiple times and says that Planned Parenthood does a lot of good things. So look through those and really dive deep into that. You know, one thing that people keep talking about too is they say, well, you're allowed to change your opinion. I would agree with that. I think a lot of us have changed opinions over time on certain issues. But not many people flip on all of their beliefs. And right now we have candidates that say, well, I can be whoever I want to be, whenever I want to be that. And so those are things that we need to take into consideration as we're looking at the current landscape. And the reason I brought up the Trump effect, I think what has happened is because Donald Trump is so bullish in tone, because of that, he has brought a lot of the others to that place as well. And so that is why we have a lot of anger built up, is because he's bringing that anger out. He's bringing that anger out of people. And I'm going to talk about that right now with my guest. We have Raul Reyes. Hey, Raul.
Hey, Andrew.
How you
good
doing,
to
man?
Hear from you.
Yeah,
very
good. Good to hear from you. So you caught me right in the middle as I'm talking about the Trump effect and how anger and bitterness is kind of taking hold of the political process. And the theme of today's show has been civility. And just to introduce Raul, Raul is the president of the Crisis Pregnancy Centers of the Greater Phoenix area. And obviously, we appreciate you joining us today. What are your thoughts, Raul, on the current political landscape that we have, and so much anger and so much bitterness from Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, Green Party? It just seems like everybody is angry. And what does that mean ultimately for the pro-life movement, for civility, and for the direction we need to go?
You know, I take that whole issue, I have to deal with it very personally, because I see myself easily slipping into a place of anger and frustration. There are some movements that have come out recently which have dealt with issues having to do with police and people that have felt that the police have not treated them fairly, and there've been, you know, all of that going on. And
sure.
And my son's a firefighter, and I'm so pro police, so that creates a certain frustration when I see how people respond and how the government responds. Certainly, with the issue of abortion, I mean, you know, California is passing bills now, making pregnancy centers putting up signs that say, "Tell their clients where to go have an abortion." There's just so much. And so, yeah, so many people are so angry and frustrated, and they start dealing with looking at a person that will solve our problems. And when I get angry, here's what I realize. What should my response be? And my response, I think our response should always be the same, and it's very hard. And our response should always be, this person needs Jesus. And that just should always be the response. That person, whether it be someone who is, you know, whatever it is they're doing, our response should be, they need Jesus. So when it comes to in the political arena, again, I think the response has to be, what can solve this? Nothing but a Christ that is turned towards God and towards Jesus. And even if we are supporting someone who has that stance, and someone who doesn't have that stance seems to be winning, you know, our attitude has got to be, God is in control. I mean, you know, it's kind of that old hymn, "It is well with my soul." You know, if we can allow the flotsam and jetsam of the world to so disrupt us that we become angry and bitter and frustrated, then we need to really reevaluate how well we are grounded in the solid rock of Jesus Christ and His Word.
Right, and I think, you know, as I've looked, I mean, I've been a political junkie for years now, and as I look at it, but I've never seen this type of, I guess, climate. I've never seen, and I'm young, but still, I've never seen this type of anger. I mean, people are mad. They are just fed up with things that are going on in D.C. They're fed up with the old guard of Republicans, the old guard of Democrats, and you're seeing that with Bernie. You're seeing that with Donald Trump, and what we have to do is look at that through lenses of, okay, well, we're pro-life, so what does that mean for us? What can we do as leaders in a pro-life movement? How can we impact? How can we have conversations with people? How can we engage with people from a loving standpoint and not from a hateful, bitter-filled standpoint?
Yeah, and you know, no matter what you and I say, we're gonna upset people, friends of ours, evangelical
right,
friends.
Absolutely.
But I think that we have to reevaluate as Christians, to what kingdom do we belong, and what is it that we're here for? And I'm the most patriotic guy. I fly a big flag. In front of my house, and I as often as I can, my family is very military. My son's a firefighter. I mean, I just love this country. But I am first and foremost a citizen of the kingdom of God. And so what I need to be doing is looking to expand the kingdom of God, because that's what the Lord's going to return to, and that's what I am a citizen of. And so I think that as things start not going the way that we want them to go as Americans, we should not allow that way of what's happening in the world to disrupt us from what our purpose is, which is to continuously share the truth and the gospel of Jesus Christ, regardless of what's going on in the world. And I think that that is our mission statement. And that should remain solid regardless of what's going on.
So as we look at that, Raul, and we see everything that's in front of us, and we have it's not just non-believers that are kind of letting anger drive them, but there's evangelicals, there're some Christian folks that are out there, and they're allowing this anger to drive them. And as we kind of pull back and not only look at the current election, but we look at the pro-life movement in general, what we want to do when we come back, as we end the show, is talk about how we can, with a biblical worldview, engage with lost people and even believers, and how we need to let that drive our conversations. We'll be back in a sec with Raul Reyes. We're back. This is Andrew Wood. I'm joined with the president of Crisis Pregnancy Centers of Greater Phoenix, Raul Reyes. And Raul, as we ended the last segment, we started talking about language and the importance of how do you interact and engage with a lost society, even a society that claims to be evangelical. How do you engage with them through a biblical worldview to say, hey, this is how we should act. This is how we should talk about life. This is how we should be who we say we need to be.
You know, and we talked about that, you know, there are different languages, and I think sometimes we confuse one language with another. And I think that there are languages that are appropriate in appropriate settings. And kind of real quickly, I can think of four kind of languages that we use, and that's the activist, the prophetic, the love or mercy language, and then the truth teller language. And the activist, you know, is out there and just kind of in your face, and really, really, you know, attacking anything that would attack life. And then the prophetic really almost sounds like an Old Testament prophet, and they're just speaking God's truth, and it really engages the heart. And then, you know, there's the love and mercy language, and I think we use that a lot in our pregnancy centers. And there's the truth tellers. And it's like, here's the facts, and, you know, just simply the facts. And I think that as believers, we have to know when to use which language with what audience. And certainly with a young woman who is finding herself in an unplanned pregnancy, that wouldn't be the place to go use an activist or even necessarily a prophetic language, but that's a great place for the love and mercy language, you know? So I just have seen evangelical and pro-life people who get so frustrated with people making decisions that end the life of a child that I've seen them be unloving and use language which is unhelpful and unmerciful.
Right, and so many times, and I talked before you called in, I was talking about, I find myself there, kind of like you said, you know, I have to kind of look in the mirror and go, where is my frustration from? Where is my heart more bent toward bitterness and hate? Or is my heart bent more toward love and understanding that I may not know what this election holds, but we know God knows what this election holds. And so because of that, regardless of who is elected, I know that my God is sovereign and is in control. Now, I may not completely understand why he allows things that he allows, But what we also have to do is understand that making decisions based in anger are we're going to regret those. And so in the pro-life world, in the pro-life movement, and I sent you a link to an article where they were changing the term completely to anti-choice. Well, that's not who we are. And so our initial reaction to that is hate and bitterness. Instead of saying, hey, let's have a conversation. I want to hear where you come from, and I want you to see where I come from.
Right.
And let's have a better understanding. We may disagree, but let's have a better understanding where we both come from.
You know, we talk about a millennial or in a post-Christian world, and what do we think it was like when Jesus was here? I mean, the Rome, you know, there was a theocratic Jewish country that was under the domination of, you know, the cruelest taskmasters on earth, the Roman Empire, who worshipped deities, you know, Zeus and Athena, and had these temples where there was prostitutes that you would go and worship the gods by paying some, you know, a woman. It was horrible, and they were just abusing the Jewish women and ridiculing and mocking the God of Israel. And what is Jesus saying during this time? Is he saying, take up arms, let's get rid of these lousy government, we've got to kick them out? He's saying, you know, blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the poor in spirit. You know, he is living in what we're afraid our country is heading towards. He's living in that to the max. And yet, what he does constantly is offer grace, mercy, and forgiveness. And I just think it's a tremendous example that I strive and fail to emulate.
Right. And my biggest, the thing that I, any opportunity I get to encourage folks to engage their culture and engage the community in debate. And a lot of people hear that and they're like, oh, that makes me uncomfortable. I don't like confrontation. But again, it's actual debate. It's debating issues respectfully, full of civility, and with out of love, instead of going in and saying, I hate you and everything you stand for. Because if you start there, I mean, you're not really going to get much deeper than that, except you're just going to be full of hate. And when I was in college, there was Michael Moore, the Michael Moore film, Fahrenheit 9/11, where he really attacked George W. And they played that at on campus. And of course, you know, you have people from both sides very upset. And I watched two students arguing, and I watched another one punch the student because they were so angry.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of sitting there and saying, well, here's why I disagree with Michael Moore, and here's why I stand with George W. or vice versa, and having an adult conversation, our first reaction is to be hateful. And so that is, we have that on steroids right now in our current climate. And what I hope will happen is, as believers, we can lead the way. But my concern is we have a lot of believers that are leading the way the other way. And endorsing and standing for candidates that just do not stand for civility and do not stand for love when it comes to having those very important discussions.
It does, and I happen to have my favorite. I think Rubio's got, you know, would be a great president. Although I think any one of our almost any of the candidates would be a better president than what we have now or what the other side offers. But I think that I've got to teach myself that rather than win political discussions, which I am a political junkie too, absolutely, but I'm trying to teach myself to seek more to win people to Christ rather than to win the debate or win the argument or win the philosophical discussion.
Absolutely. And the great thing about it, Raul, is regardless of who wins the election, we know what kingdom we're a part of, and that's the main thing.
Yes,
Raul, thank you so much for joining me today. We're going to have another conversation, I know, later down the road where you'll join us again.
But happy back. I'd love to be back.
Andrew. Absolutely, Raul. Thanks so much. This is Andrew Wood for Hope Resource Center. We'll be back next week.
Lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just ahead. Down the path of forgiveness. Salvation's waiting.